Welcome to the Drill Down. We've got business stories behind stocks on the move. I'm Corey Johnson with episode number 159. Well, just ahead, FactSet Research shows some perhaps surprisingly strong results despite the downturn on Wall Street. And Carnival Cruise Lines, does it have the groove back? People are getting back on the boat, but will it continue? And how about software profits with a car wash? That's right. We're going to talk to the CEO of a company called Mr. Car Wash, a business with fantastic margins, just like the software business. You'll be surprised. But first, it's sponsor time.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Never miss another critical event or insight ever. With Era, customize your company watch list and track key events, mentions, filings, and more, all within an easy-to-use, customizable interface. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And we're so glad you're listening to the Drill Down podcast. We would hate for you to miss any of our episodes. You can avoid that by clicking the subscribe button or the follow button, depending on the app that you are using to listen to podcasts. That way you'll catch every show.
And the Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com, to learn more.
All right, I'm Corey Johnson. Welcome to the Drill Down podcast. We are, as you've noticed, back from our little summer break. We're glad to have you with us. Isaac Webster joins me. He is our executive producer. And Isaac, thanks for helping me get through these stocks to drill down on.
Well, Corey, what stocks are you drilling down on today?
Let's start with FactSet Research Systems. Do you know FactSet at all? I know, you know, obviously we were Bloomberg employees for, you and I were for a while. FactSet is an important competitor to Bloomberg in providing, you know, databases and financial computer products for professional investors.
Yeah, I mean, I was a terminal guy for over 10 years at Bloomberg, but FactSet is new to me, trades under FDS, and FDS shares have risen almost 18% in a year, and shares have jumped higher in June 2022, obviously well outperforming the broader market.
Well, anything higher in June is outperforming the market, yes. Flat in June would outperform the market. But FactSet, you know, you would think that Wall Street would start pulling back and firing people as trading volumes have decreased. We've seen that kind of across the board. And maybe people lose interest in casual moments on Wall Street, and people lose jobs on Wall Street because performance isn't there. But no, FactSet coming out and announcing pretty strong quarter. And it was interesting from FactSet because, again, I think that that wasn't expected. They've been interestingly adding to their offerings. And that has really made a difference for them and showed up in the third quarter because of acquisitions that they did. Their revenues were up 22% from the previous year. And even if you take out their acquisitions, they still had a 10% increase in professional services on a year-over-year basis, organic ASV year-over-year. So very impressive for this company. And despite what's been going on in the markets, they came out and said, don't worry, we are going to hit the upper end of our targets for this year. And that's what sent the stock flying. Now, There's a story out there among professional traders of concern. I wouldn't go as far as to call it a short story, but there was concern. They acquired the CUSIP business. Do you know CUSIP?
This is another
It's a ridiculous, archaic, seemingly archaic thing. But CUSIP is the company that assigns the numbers to a new stock that trades, and then distributes that number assignation to all of the places that trade stocks. So when you place a
business to be in.
I don't know. It's a weird business. If you were for, I don't know, shares of Apple, you might put in a trade for AAPL and you want to buy 100 AAPL, whatever. But in fact, when those trades go through the systems, they don't go in as letters that you traded. They go in under a CUSIP number. And that number is assigned by a private company. And that company was acquired by FactSet in the last year. So as we see fewer IPOs, we see fewer CUSIPs being assigned, and therefore we see less revenues for CUSIP. So you wonder, well, FactSet, how lovely that you bought the CUSIP business. that must have been a terrible decision because there will be fewer assignations of CUSIP numbers because there will be fewer SPACs and fewer IPOs or whatever you want to call the IPO, you know, financial trend of our of the next wave. It's not happening now. The markets are closed. So listen to what the chief financial officer had to say to kind of allay those concerns about all the revenues from the assignment of new CUSIP numbers. Here is Chief Financial Officer Linda Huber.
The 15% of revenues that comes from the assignment of new CUSIP numbers for new securities, you're correct about that. That is not recurring revenue. The other 85% of CUSIP revenues are in fact recurring. So if we do have a bit of a slowdown in capital markets activity, we may see a slight trending down of that 15% of CUSIP's revenues. But I'm not sure that you're going to notice that overall in the total mix of the company. And we would expect that that would just be if capital markets do take a downturn. So again, that piece is pretty minor as well.
So she shut that down quick. I think just saying that the new CUSIP number assignments is not a really big business for them, even within the CUSIP business for FactSet.
But to be concerned about, you know, current decline in CUSIP usage, if you will, I mean, it seems like a very myopic, short-sighted concern.
Well, you know, they spent $150 million, you know, or this CUSIP business, I should say, has revenues on a year-over-year basis of over $150 million. You know, that you can see why someone might say, hey, I don't want to go in and buy a stock where this is not a good business decision to buy a business unit that does something that people don't need right now.
Right now, though.
It's a better business to sell umbrellas when
it's always going to be something that people need. It's always going to be something that's necessary. Right?
Is it? We'll see. I wish them well.
Someone's got to assign those numbers. Who are FactSet's clients, customers? I know Bloomberg's clients, customers very well, but I don't know FactSet's.
FactSet knows Bloomberg's customers and clients very well, and it wants them. And they are in the market with what is often a cheaper product offering similar. You know, if a Bloomberg customer, you might be an equity trader, but you're buying all the same bond functionality and modeling functionality and messaging functionality, all the stuff that you might not want with a Bloomberg terminal. With FactSet, you can tailor what you want to get a little bit more and spend less money on it. Competing business models, to be sure, but really the same client base.
Corey, what is your next drill down?
Carnival.
Carnival Cruise Lines, CCL, and shares have rallied on the back of the recent quarterly report. But taking a longer view, shares have fallen almost 61% over the past 12 months and currently trading at less than half of their 52-week high.
Do you remember when that cruise ship was in the San Francisco Bay and there was concern that there were people on it, there were a few people on it who had COVID? There were like six people on the boat or 30 people on the boat who had COVID, and we later found out that President Trump didn't want the boat to land in America because then it would boost his COVID numbers by five or six cases or 10 or 20 or whatever. I saw the boat because it did, in fact, eventually land in either Oakland or Alameda. I saw it out in the San Francisco Bay in any case, and it was there for quite a while. People are coming back to cruises. People are returning to cruises. And Carnival announced that they're seeing some really positive numbers that wasn't clear when this would happen, but it's starting to happen now. And they talked about what they're doing in terms of their occupancy rates and how much that occupancy is increasing over the same time last year significantly. Here is a CEO, Arnold Donald. God, I could be able to, what a name, Arnold Donald. Arnold Donald, interesting choice.
Arnold Donald.
Mr. and Mrs. Donald.
I like it.
Arnold Donald is the CEO, and he talked about the occupancy rates and the strength they are seeing in the occupancy of cruise ships.
You know, we have real strength in occupancy, and we had some intentionally constrained occupancy as we brought ships back online because of protocols in different places and so on. We also had some isolated situations where we were moving, you know, crew around temporarily as we were staffing up with crew and constrained capacity for those reasons as well. But overall, our occupancy rates have, as we shared, have really improved over time here. And as we mentioned, the Carnival brand is looking at 110% occupancy in the third quarter. So we have more capacity sailing, and occupancy is rising nicely. And as the world continues to relax and become comfortable managing the virus and restrictions are relaxed, we see things moving more in the direction of the Carnival brand, where things are more normalized, even though they still have some restrictions right now.
You know, it's not that surprising, though, because cruise line consumers love to go on cruises, and they're a sticky consumer base. I only know that because I'm married into a cruising family. They
really
love to go on cruises, and they, you know, they took their pauses. My in-laws, you know, they pressed pause during the pandemic, but they're back and they've been cruising already, and they love it. And I know a lot of people like that, consumers like that, they just love going cruises. So I'm not surprised it's bouncing back.
I have never been.
Me neither. I've never been on a cruise, actually.
I'm going to keep it that way. I'm good.
Yeah, I like to go on boats. The cruise thing doesn't appeal so much to me, but they love it. They just rave.
I have a friend who's significantly older than me, retired. And his big thing every year is like this giant, expensive 3-week cruise with his wife. And they go all over the world, and they love being having the same room as they go to all these different places. And it's a favorite for his. To your point, customers are spending money on cruises that they haven't taken. Another number that Carnival put out saying customer deposits had gone from $3.7 billion a year ago to a little more than a year ago to $5.1 billion. So an increase of $1.4 billion in deposits for cruises, customers putting their money where the Lido deck will be soon.
Corey, what's your next drill down?
Smith & Wesson Brands. You know them well. They make Smith & Wesson guns.
Oh, how nice for them. Smith & Wesson trades under SWBI. Shares have jumped double-digit percents in June 2022 after that Supreme Court ruling that said it was okay to carry firearms in New York, despite all the mass shootings across the U.S. But over the past 12 months, SWBI shares have fallen 45%.
And SWBI's revenues have fallen 44% over the last year. They announced quarterly earnings. Yes, so the stock flies on the court news because people are looking for some way to trade that with the Supreme Court ruling. But when they announced quarterly earnings, it happened to come right after the ruling. So the question is there, they had a big surge in gun sales during the pandemic. They saw a big surge in gun usage, right? People were going to shooting ranges. People were engaged in all sorts of outdoor sports, including riflery and handgun use. But what is the business here for Smith & Wesson as it relates to concealed carry products? And what does this Supreme Court ruling mean? It was interesting to hear Mark Smith, the CEO of Smith & Wesson, talk about this very specifically about the ruling.
So just broadly on the ruling, it simply clarifies that, responsible law-abiding citizens don't need to ask the government's permission to exercise their constitutional rights. We obviously agree with this. And insofar as, impact to concealed carry in our products, concealed carry is a pretty big portion of our market. We expect that, as it expands the access of those products to those law-abiding citizens, that'll have a positive impact on us. What that is, probably too early to tell.
So yeah, Isaac, stock surges with an expectation there'll be a lot more sales, but it doesn't sound like Smith & Wesson thinks there's going to be a lot more sales from this ruling. And I think there's still more lawmaking to be done around this, but the Supreme Court making some headlines in the stock market, not just in every other section of the newspaper for those old farts like me that still read newspapers that have sections. All right, coming up next, we've got a really unusual, at least to me, company that has fantastic software-like margins, Mr. Car Wash. It is a roll-up of a number of car wash companies. They're growing fast. They've got great margins. We're going to talk about how to look at this kind of business, how they're managing this kind of business, and the great risks they took going to a subscription business model. Mr. Car Wash CEO John Lai joins the drill down right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com, to learn more.
All right, welcome back to the Drill Down podcast. We are joined right now by John Lai, the CEO of Mr. Car Wash. Are you actually Mr. Car Wash? Is there Mr. Car Wash?
So the brand actually was formed in 1969. There was a chain of car washes in Houston, Texas, named Mr. Car Wash. And when we began this journey, as we were looking for what to call Mr. Car Wash, there was three other companies that were quickly kind of acquired to create this platform. And the team, which predated me, elected to go with Mr. because it was the largest of the three segments, and as a result, the most powerful voice in the room, and the most logical, quite frankly.
It's a great name. There's a Mr. Yeah, Met. Why shouldn't there be a Mr. Car Wash?
It's awesome. Yeah, we've grown the brand through the in-store experience, and it's become, you know, what we believe to be a beloved, you know, somewhat legendary brand in the markets that we're in. And, you know, our customers associate the brand with quality and speed and terrific customer service.
So explain to me how the business works. When I read through your financial filings, I was thinking this is going to be a fun one, because when I was a financial analyst, one of the things that I would do when I was at a hedge fund was I would break down how the business worked on a unit basis. And I would imagine that for your business, there's the four wall cost, right? There's the cost of building the facility with the car washing machines and, you know, literally the walls and the water and the roof and everything. And then there's the kind of operational costs. What does a four wall cost look like for a car wash? What do you get for it?
Yeah, so there's a lot of engineering. There's a lot of technology that goes into building a car wash. And I think a lot of people can underestimate the amount of mechanization, automation, chemistry, et cetera. But the systems that we use to process cars and do it in a way where we're as low labor as possible require some material CapEx. And so the total cost in today's dollars of building a car wash could be north of $6 million when you factor in the land and the construction, the land prep, and then, you know, the FF&E. So it's a pretty material upfront CapEx investment. But you know, when you
do
look
you typically
at the
buy the land,
we do. But then over time, we'll do a sale leaseback and we'll take those proceeds and it's less cash up front as a result.
So then, ongoing costs. I mean, what are the ongoing costs for car wash? I would imagine water is the biggest part of it, and labor.
Labor is the biggest part, not water. And so again, we run a low labor model where you can literally in our express exterior stores, you know, process north of 150, upwards of 200 cars per hour with three people on the clock. Again, because we use so much technology and automation to process that car, it's a very efficient model. So our total labor can run, on a percentage of revenue in the high 20s, low 30s, again, depending upon the volume of the store. But the margin profile, more specifically, is very, very healthy. And the four-wall margins can range anywhere from 45% north of 50%, which is a beautiful business. And so when you look at our AUVs.
That's essentially gross margin. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, four-wall, which is awesome. When you look at our AUVs and compare that to other multi-unit retail services businesses, it's a very attractive category where today we're averaging approximately $2 million in sales. And then on 50% margins, you know, we can get close to $1 million in what we call EBITDAR, because we want to factor in that rent.
Explain that again. So $1 million EBITDAR is the rent, you said?
Correct.
That profit, that EBITDAR profit, that $1 million a year?
It's pretty awesome.
It's fantastic. Yeah. And $6 million? That's amazing.
Which is why this category is such a hot category right now. And we went from being the Rodney Dangerfields coming through the back door and not getting a lot of respect to, and it's surreal, to be honest with you, to now be kind of the I'm not going to say we're the good looking kids in school, but we're certainly getting a lot of attention and interest. But when you have that kind of, and it's not just margin profile, it's the dollar profit that we're generating per unit. And then you multiply that times, you know, north of 400 locations, becomes very, very meaningful. And right now, if I could just, you know, segue for a second, services, which is the space that we're in, you know, consumer services specifically, with respect to, you know, other consumer businesses that have more of a goods kind of profile, you know, it's a really beautiful business to be in, because a lot of, there's just been a natural migration year over year from folks that were doing services themselves to having folks doing things for them. And we're benefiting from that natural migration of people that used to wash in their driveway that didn't have an hour to do that anymore, and they want someone to do it for them. And what has changed the game for us, and quite frankly, the way that we've, you know, evolved as a company and transformed this company, is that midway through our journey, we discovered the power of a subscription model and offering our customers the opportunity to pay a flat monthly fee and wash as often as they like. And what we have done in that process is take what was a relatively infrequent service for the average American motorist and change their behavior. And if you can change behavior in consumer marketing and consumer services, I apologize for my Outlook beep there. But when you can change behavior in how people consume your product and have them adopted as part of the regular purchasing pattern, that's kind of the holy grail. So what has happened is we've taken what was in our world a once a quarter kind of service, and now our members are washing almost once a week because we've now encouraged them to keep their car clean. And once they get comfortable with this, or they derive the joy of having their car clean all the time for a very good, very good value. We have been able to lift that value of that customer by close to 6x.
It is interesting what people spend on their cars and the maintenance of the cars. I've looked at other companies, Valvoline, we talked about on our show recently, showing fantastic growth in that segment of oil changes and so on, and other sort of maintenance issues, regular maintenance issues for the cars, and how those costs are going up. What has the inability of automakers to make new cars and the rising price of used cars that has been a result of that, all relating to the supply chain screw-ups from the pandemic, what has that meant for your business?
Yeah, so if you zoom out for a second, just look at the U.S. car park and, you know, roughly speaking, there's 285 million vehicles in America. And when people look at our category, technically we're consumer discretionary. And when in a consumer discretionary, I think there's always some questions around demand and how that demand is going to be impacted, particularly in a high
inflation. Especially with inflation and fears of a recession. Yeah,
exactly. And I guess those are fair concerns if the American budget is being squeezed and spread thinner. You know, if folks are starting to tighten their belt, particularly folks on the lower end of the income bracket, you know, will car wash services, for example, be impacted? So with gas prices, and you mentioned you're in California, the average price of a gallon of gas is north of $6. U.S. average is $5. We're kind of in unprecedented times right now. But when you look at just your automotive budget and what one typically spends for getting from point A to point B, you know, there's the car payment, there's insurance, there's gas, there's maintenance, and then there's this kind of discretionary nice to have car wash. And if you had choices on where you should spend your money and you're making hard choices, is a car wash going to be one of those things that you dial back and cut back on? We haven't seen that in this current environment. And we believe it speaks to the joy and the pleasure that people drive from taking care of their assets and the feel-good experience that they have. It's joy.
Isn't joy a little strong? I like a car wash, but joy. I'm a regular car washing guy. I take the car to the wash every week because I get an old car that looks a lot better when it's clean, but joy.
Yeah, so a skeptic or a cynic would say, isn't this a utilitarian kind of, you know, taking the dirt off of your car? If you think about it, getting from point A to point B, there's no, having a clean car doesn't help you achieve that objective. So why do people do it? There's an emotive component to wanting to be on top of your game, you know, wear clean clothes, have a clean kitchen, but also your vehicle is an expression of yourself in a lot of ways for many Americans. For some, it's just transportation, but for the bulk, there's an aspirational, there's a trade-up component in why people drive fancy vehicles. If it was purely just transportation, we'd all be driving Yugos. But why people trade up and want to have fancy leather and a fancy stereo system, you know, there's a car culture in America and joy that people derive from driving. And to that end, if this is an asset and it's a meaningful asset to them, and for many Americans, it's their second most valuable asset next to their home, they want to keep it clean and they want to feel good about it. And we see it every day. We're delivering happiness. That might sound a little corny to you, but we are. And our customers leave our... So when you're fixing your transmission, and if that transmission costs you north of $500, you're not jumping up and down cutting that check, but you have to. You're not jumping up and down when you fill up your tank and it's $60, $80 to fill it up. But when you leave Mr. Car Wash, you've got a big smile on your face because you feel like you're on top of your business.
Interesting. I'll give you that. The decision to go to subscriptions is a very interesting one. That must have been, surely you tested it, but that must have, that requires quite a leap of faith, concern that the people start showing up every day.
Radical.
Maybe bringing in every car, their neighbor's cars. I don't know. Talk about how you worked through that logic.
It was, the internal resistance within our organization was intense, because of that very fear of the unknown. How were people going to behave? I use a really simple example of an all-you-can-eat Chinese buffet where, you know, if people went up and ate 20 plates, you know, there's a cost of goods. And over time, a customer can become unprofitable. But if you look at how people normally behave, you know, maybe after that second plate, you know, 95% of your customers are going to say, okay, I've had enough, and this can be one table that goes crazy, and you may lose money on that one table. And when we look at our business over time, and we have now north of 1.8 million unique members, the bulk of those members come in about once a week. And we certainly have some outliers that come in more frequently than that. And that's fine. And that's offset by the less frequent customers. So it is a highly profitable program, very accretive. And it changed the game. 65% of our revenues now are subscription. It's predictable. It's recurring. And it's high margin. And when you can deliver that level of predictability from, if you're an investor and knowing that you have this consistent cash flow, it's a beautiful thing.
It helps with expansion plans, I would imagine.
For sure. So what we're doing right now is we increase our footprint and continue to grow and look at the close to 70 MSAs that we're in today in 21 states. We have approximately about a 20% market share in each of those markets. And in most of those markets, that's a number one position. But we have certain markets where we enjoy north of a 50% market share. And in those markets, we do particularly well. And so we have elevated AUVs. And we believe there's a network effect. There's a benefit to you as a consumer, a member specifically, where you have the option to wash wherever you are in the city. And so if you're in Salt Lake City and we have 15 locations within a 10-minute drive time of wherever you are in the city, there's a Mr. Car Wash available to you. And that's a powerful value prop vis-a-vis an independent operator that may have one or three stores.
Interesting. You talked about this, you know, signing up these customers, taking them from paying for the wash to being a subscription. How long do they last as subscribers? Do you know yet? I mean, obviously you're making some decisions when it comes to how you account for it, but what are you seeing in terms of how long they last as a customer?
Yeah. So when we look at the membership length, there's an interesting phenomenon, I think somewhat different than most subscription businesses, where we have a retail component to our business where folks can come in and pay as they go. And so if we have churn in the traditional sense of people that drop out of the program, in most other businesses, that's technically a lost customer. In our world, because we've made it so easy for them to sign up and so easy for them as a result to cancel if they feel that they're not driving the same value of it. It's not like they're a lost customer that they will then revert to paying as they go. And so a lost customer is not by definition a lost customer in our world. But we are very focused on improving the member experience and increasing their engagement and identifying folks that are most likely to attrit and do more to encourage them, quite frankly, to use it. And again, get into the pattern of washing once a week. And what we see over time is that people perhaps initially come in through what I call a value door, where they'll do the calculus to say, well, if it's, and this is our price point, which has been the same price point since inception, for $19.99 a month, for $20 a month, I can wash my car every day if I like, and that's an extreme value. And when they do that math, they say, hey, if I'm paying today $8 or $10 for a regular retail wash, on the third visit, I'm saving money, or it's free, and fourth visit, it's extreme value. And so that's the initial way people say to themselves, hey, I think I'm going to sign up for this because I enjoy having a clean car. The subscription is pretty easy. There's no long-term contract. There's no upfront membership fee, and $20 is affordable to me. But then over time, when they become accustomed to having that car clean all the time, it's a fascinating phenomenon where you as a motorist see a slight bit of film on your hood. From the outside, you don't really notice that film, but when you're driving, you see it, and then it just starts to drive you nuts. And then, God forbid, there's a bug splat on your windshield. And I don't know, I'm kind of a clean freak, but when you have more than one spot on your windshield, you want to get it off. And once you do, you're back in that groove. But when your car is dirty, you just don't feel right. So I'm going to say train people, but got people accustomed to how, and really transform the way that they care for the vehicle. And that's awesome.
So I'll re-ask the question. What do you mean you don't know about me? Clearly I'm a neat freak. Look, you're seeing me in, as I broadcast here from my home studio. It's there's neatness. Our listeners can only imagine. But in terms of duration though, so obviously you've got your customer acquisition costs. You get them however you get them. We can talk about that, but how long do you keep
our CAC? Our CAC is actually zero. And the reason why it's zero is that we're not spending all money to bring in someone from the outside. We're taking our existing retail customers and this
you
is
transfer a transfer them to subscriptions. So again, do you know how long you keep them on average?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's anywhere from 13 to 15 months.
Super interesting. I wish I was getting $10 car washes here in Northern California. That's not happening. Right. What's the big competition for you?
So there's a ton of really, really good regional operators that do a great job, and we have the utmost respect for them. On a national level, it's still very fragmented industry with not a dominant national player. There's some super regional players that do really, really well. We, in the overall scheme of things, while we're the nation's largest car wash platform, we see ourselves as quite small. And with 400 locations, our opportunity to scale and to continue on this trajectory and to grow, both in our existing markets and some of the white space that's out there where we're not in today, is right in front of us. And so it feels like a wide open field. And we guesstimate that we have less than a 5% U.S. national market share. Which is tiny. And so how high we can scale this company is yet to be determined, but we're on this, very fast trajectory of trying to get there quicker, but we're not the only ones.
It's interesting that you've got software like margins, but it's probably easier to hire car washers than software programmers.
There's actually a war for talent at every level of this society, and finding good people is, I think, if you talk to CEOs all the time, it's all about people and talent. And I would say that for us, it's the differentiator. What we hear time and time again, and if you were to boil down our value prop, so quality, not enough can be said about quality, but the best businesses usually offer really, really great quality. And then in our world, speed and the ability to execute quickly is something that the American consumer demands. So you got to execute across those two fronts consistently across a geographically spread out and a very diverse portfolio of stores. Where we, separate from the pack is on the customer service side. So we embrace, theories of terms like hospitality and treating our guests as if they're, honored members of our family, but getting 7,000 employees to deliver this elevated level of customer service doesn't happen overnight. And so we're very culture driven, and we feel that a happy, highly engaged team member delivers an exceptional experience to the customer, and there's that virtuous cycle. So what do we do to take care of our team members? We start with paying them well and treating them well, training them well, offering career path progression. And again, the best companies in our view focus on their people first and put their people at the center of their universe. And that equates to and leads to a high, high performance and high profitability.
Well, it's amazing profitability, to be sure. What a fascinating company Mr. Car Wash is. John Lai is the CEO of Mr. Car Wash. My last piece of advice for you, John, is you. I think you should have the power vested in you to give someone the title of Mr. Car Wash of the month and just walk around with like a sword or like a big sponge and tap them on the shoulder. And I dub thee Mr. Car Wash for the month of September 2022. I just think that would be a wonderful, that's just me.
I love it. We'll do that. And there's a reason I'm running a
podcast business, not a car wash business, John. Thank you very much.
You've been listening
to Drillline Podcast. Now coming up, we've got one number that tells us a whole lot about how many cars these guys wash annually. It is a big number. We'll tell you that number when the drill down continues.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. With Era, give yourself an information advantage. Connect directly to earnings calls and other investor events with live transcription and event intelligence. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you can listen to this, the Drill Down podcast, with ease, even more easily than I can say it, by going to your smart speaker and saying, hey, smart speaker, play the latest Drill Down podcast. Then you'll hear our most recent show.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following at DrillDownPod and connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
All right, back to the Drill Down podcast. We have the Drill Down Bite, that one number, Isaac, that tells us a whole lot. How many cars do you think, we know, with $758 million in annual revenues, how many cars do you think they wash annually?
You know, this is tough because
so 313 locations.
I've never seen a location. I've never seen a Mr. Car Wash, so it's kind of difficult. But I know I can see the numbers. How
you've
well
seen a car
doing.
Wash before?
So I'm
cars go in, they pay some money, they go out.
Oh, of course, I live in LA. So I would guess how many cars do they wash a year? Was that your question?
So there's 313 locations at the end of last year. Those are their express exterior locations. Interior locations are just 83. So you figure 313 locations.
I'm horrible at math, but let's say 500,000 cars.
Significantly more. It's in the millions.
Oh, how about 5 million cars?
So the answer is 75 million cars were washed annually.
Wait, what?
Yeah. 75 million cars. So that averages about about a quarter million, a little less than a quarter million per store, if you will, every year.
Wow.
Yeah.
And these guys are making money hand over fist.
It's a fascinating business. And again, those EBITDA margins that he talked about are fascinating to see.
Listen, when I first reached out to this company, they came on my radar. I saw their earnings release a couple months ago. I think I've been talking to them for maybe 3 months at this point. I saw their earnings release. There was something that caught my eye. Then I looked up their stock chart and saw the numbers they're working with, and I was like blown away. I thought that my eyes had glazed over, like crossed, or like I'd lost all my senses, because I just didn't understand how a car wash company did so well. It blows my mind.
I'm doing some more math. I do about, you know, less than 5,000, about 5,000 car washes, not quite 5,000 car washes per store per month.
Damn.
I'm sorry, per week. Excuse me.
Can we say
5,000 per week?
It's a lot of washing. A lot of dirty cars.
I'm all for it. I push back a little bit his notion that it was a joy, that they deliver joy. But I have to say, when I take my old car that is going from being old to classic, I don't know what point that happens. But when I take it through the car wash, it is a very different looking old piece of junk. It's not a piece of junk.
Oh, I love getting my car washed. Oh, it is a joy for me. I'll have to check. I'm going to have to seek out one.
That's because you LA people don't actually drive anywhere. You just go to the 405 and sit and stare at everybody else's car.
Well, you well, it's a part. The 405 is a parking lot, so that's all you can do. You can't really drive. Damn,
that traffic jam. All right, you've been listening to the Drill Down Podcast. We're grateful for your time. Maybe you're listening while you're in your car right now. I strongly advise that. Maybe you're at the car wash. But get out of the car wash so you don't get wet. Wait before it goes through the machines. Advice. It's free advice. I'm Corey Johnson. Isaac Webster is
wonderful
our
advice you give.
Isaac Webster is our executive producer.
Wow.
Our editor extraordinaire, Ben Wilson, is on the mics, on the turntables for us. The Drill Down's a production of the Business Podcast Network.